Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to America's Best Baseball Podcast. We take you behind the scenes in and around Major League Baseball with former big league manager Kevin Kennedy and veteran baseball broadcaster Rich Herrera. This is the only weekly podcast hosted by someone like Kennedy who played, coached, and managed in pro ball. So we can take you into the manager's office for a real insider's view of baseball alongside a veteran baseball broadcaster like Herrera who has covered the game from coast to coast. So let's talk some baseball with your hosts. Here they are. The skipper, Kevin Kennedy, and Rich Herrera.
Welcome, everybody, to America's Best Baseball Podcast. The skipper, Kevin Kennedy, Rich Herrera. You know, Skip, we just had to wait until one of these marquee free agents signed to get the podcast going for the next baseball season, and it happens today. ESPN, the first to report, Manny Machado going to the San Diego Padres, 10 years, $300 million. Kevin, in your wildest dreams, in all your years of professional baseball, did you ever think we'd see a $300 million man?
No, you know what I was thinking about this morning, and after I heard that Machado sounded like he was going to sign, and then of course he did sign for that amount of money. I was thinking about where I was when my teammate in high school, Robin Yount, became the first $3 million player a year. That was 1989. I was managing in the Dominican Republic. I heard it over there in the Dominican, and I couldn't believe it. I said, my gosh, $3 million a year? It was like unfathomable to think about that then. Well, flash forward to today. How about $300 million for 10 years? $30 million a year for a ball player. No, Rich, it's just unthinkable to me. It's incredible to me, that amount of money. And I think that what it shows you, Rich, is that ball clubs are making money, and it's not necessarily through the turnstiles either. They're making money, you know, in the marketing department. They're making money in selling, you know, hats and all different ways, not just ticket sales are drawing their income. Obviously, they're making revenue from TV, national TV, local revenue rights, et cetera. But it just tells me that teams are making a lot of money. You don't have to be the Dodgers. You don't have to be the Yankees. You don't have to be the Red Sox to sign a guy like Machado.
And before, it had been because the Yankees got more money for their local television and in radio contracts. The Dodgers were the same. The Red Sox were the same. But and they still do. They still make more money for Yankee broadcast on TV than, let's say, the San Diego Padres do on theirs. But now, because of MLB.com, Major League Baseball Advanced Media, BAMTech, all the different digital things that they have,
right?
And we talk about the marketing efforts. It's the licensed goods. It's the digital products. It's the at-bat that all goes into a central revenue
pool.
Distributed to all the ball clubs to help make them more competitive. Are you surprised that Manny Machado got the 10-year deal that he got? Because I quite honestly was waiting to see who was going to be the first to say, I'll take on another one of these 10-year deals.
When it went this long, I didn't think any team was going to go 10 years. I thought that was the holdup. And, you know, it just goes to show you have to outbid, a team like the Chicago White Sox, who were a little bit surprised when Manny went to San Diego. They thought they were maybe the highest bidder. Maybe the Philadelphia Phillies, who all winter, all offseason, we're talking about, we have money to spend on both Machado and Harper, and we're going to go for it. And, you know, you would think they could outbid anybody. And maybe it wasn't just about the bidding. Maybe it's about, you know, San Diego and where they're going. Maybe it's about the area. I mean, I went to school at San Diego State. You're living down there now. I mean, who wouldn't want to be in San Diego for 10 years making $30 million a year to play baseball?
Sign me up. I'm ready to go. Sign me up. Let's go.
I'm telling you.
Let's talk about Manny Machado himself. I said this earlier on the radio here in San Diego, that this reminds me of one of those landscape seismic moves of talent from one side of the country to the other. And I kind of threw out Alex Rodriguez when he left the Mariners. He went to the Texas Rangers. And I know you were the manager there, Kevin, but that kind of changed the state of that franchise. Barry Bonds leaves Pittsburgh, goes to San Francisco, changes the state of that franchise. Wherever Harper ends up going, wherever Machado ends up going, that is one of those shifts in talents, Kevin, that I think changes the landscape of baseball.
Well, you know, in some ways, I think Machado changes the Padres more than maybe a Bryce Harper would change whoever he's going to end up. And I say that because I got a chance to evaluate him in person for the last 2.5 months of the season when he came to the Dodgers. I did not know that Manny Machado, number one, was as good a defensive player with the best arm I've seen at shortstop in both leagues in the last couple of years. I didn't know that he was that good defensively until I saw him on a daily basis. And I've said that before about guys like Chase Utley when he came to the Dodgers. I didn't know he was as good as he was. I mean, you see the numbers and you hear about him from teammates, what kind of guy he is, this and that. But when you actually watch a guy day in and day out and you evaluate him in your own mind when you're broadcasting a game or when you're just watching a game, whether it be TV or live. And personally, I like to watch guys live. I've always told you that. I've told everybody that the best way to evaluate for me is not on video. You've got to see a guy in person. You got to see his actions. You got to see his first step defensively. You got to see, you know, what he does in his load offensively, what his setup is, you know, how he approaches the baseball, not just the finished product, not just the end result. And Manny Machado, if he wants to play shortstop, he can flat out play shortstop defensively. He doesn't have to play third base. I'm telling you, Rich, he's that good defensively. That's just number one.
I've saw him for a long time in the American League East. Great instincts, great first step, soft hands, cannon for an arm.
Cannon.
He's got wheels. He's got power. He can hit for average. He's the whole package.
He's the whole package, you know, and being in the East as well, broadcasting for a while, when you see a team at, you know, three games at a time and maybe 19, 20 times during a season, that's one thing. But again, it's watching him every day, watching what he does to get ready to be the player he is. And one thing I will say on a positive note for Manny Machado, he plays every day. He doesn't beg out of games. I was making a note today on a morning show that I did. Locally, as a matter of fact, in San Diego, and I made this mention. I said, you know, some players, when I had a guy like Juan Gonzalez back in the 90s and in those years when he played in the 90s or 2000s, you know, Juan would have back problems. He sometimes would find a way to get out of the lineup, and you just had to expect that he was not going to play 150 games. He was not going to be that type of guy. So you would get 120 games out of him. You'd get about 35 to 40 home runs, and you'd get his 100 RBIs, and you'd take that. Manny Machado is going to be out there every day. He's going to play 150-plus games if they want him to. He's going to play more than that. That's one thing I will say for him. And when he plays, he puts up huge numbers. And he can hit good pitching when he wants to. Now, he didn't look very good in the World Series. He didn't hustle a few times there. We know about the comments that he made, that he's not Charlie Hustle, et cetera, that he's been trying for 7 years to be that type of player. But when he evaluates himself and watches it, he knows how bad he looks. He just hasn't been able to change it sometimes. He'll hit a ball so hard that he thinks a home run. It's a home run, and he's 3 feet out of the box, you know, at home plate, and he barely gets to first base on a ball hit, you know, 375 feet. He does that sometimes. And then there's the other side of it, too, where he does some things where some players have called him a dirty player. He did a couple things in the playoffs with slides that were, you know, slides that were not just taking a guy out. They looked like they had intent to do some damage on a guy. And Christian Yelich even said that after one of the games against the Brewers, that he's a dirty player. He's always been a dirty player. Well, you know, those are some of the negatives that went against Manny Machado. I don't know Manny well enough personally to give you any more than just the evaluation I just gave from watching him. But I can tell you this guy can flat out play, and he's a difference maker. And if he does play his 155 games or so, he's going to make the Padres a much better player, and he's going to make a difference in the division this year, and especially with Hosmer there, and hopefully for San Diego, he has a better year, and especially with all the young prospects that are coming up with San Diego and have been there with San Diego. The one thing that I'm still curious about, you know, who's going to lead the way as far as pitching goes.
And that's the big question. There's pitching, but it's still down in the lower levels of the minor leagues. So let's talk a little bit about Manny Machado. And I guess it's Manny Machado 2.0. Like you said, played 7 years to get to this point. Now he's to this point that if the reports are true, $300 million of bank account. We've broken this down in the podcast before and on satellite radio. That's nice, but you take out taxes and everything else. It's less than $300 million, but it's the biggest contract in American sports history, not just in baseball, across the board. He's got a richer contract than Michael Jordan ever had, than Tom Brady's ever had, than, you know, name anybody in baseball, Mike Trout, all the rest, Albert Pujols, all those ginormous contracts. He has a bigger contract than anyone else.
Tiger Woods. Throw him in there.
Yeah.
Throw anybody in there.
Anybody in there. He's got a bigger contract than that. With all that being said, that also comes with expectations, and that comes with pressure. Now, Kevin, I've seen it before in the big leagues. You've seen it before. We knew guys. I've been around guys that before they got their payday, they were the biggest pains in the butt. And once they got their payday, they're able to relax. And they were great players. I've also seen players that got their money and the pressure just absolutely crushed them. What's it like when these players get these contracts and they try to perform with expectations they've never thought of or dreamed of before in their life?
Well, I don't think that Manny's going to feel that. You know, when he got traded to L.A., the Dodgers were, you know, playing better baseball, and they needed somebody to help push them over the top to – end up winning the division. And you know, it came down to the final game. It went to 163, as a matter of fact, and he was a difference maker for them, no doubt, because they lost Corey Seager for the year, and he played extremely well. From I was there the first day he was there, from the first game on, we were on the road at the time, and from the first game he played to the end, he didn't really, I mean, I didn't see him looking like he felt any pressure. Now, he may have been during a World Series because he didn't perform very well offensively. You know, he didn't have a couple of good games in the LCS either. Then he came back and had a real big game and hit a big homer in one of those games, big home run. So I think that Manny, I don't think he's going to be one of those guys because, first of all, because of his swing. Because of it, he's got a very easy setup. He's slightly open with his stance. He doesn't have a lot of moving parts. There's not a huge leg kick. There's not a lot of timing mechanisms that he has to have. He's just got really good balance. He's really a simple approach to the baseball, and the ball just jumps off his bat offensively. So, and he can reach the outside corner. He's got a lot of length with his body, I'm talking about. So I don't think offensively he's going to have a problem. And defensively, to me, it looks like he really enjoys making great plays in the hole at shortstop. I mean, he can throw the fastest runner out from the hole like nobody I've seen in a long, long time. And I was really impressed defensively. Both Rick Monday and I, who worked together a lot the last 7 years, were shocked at what we saw defensively because we were told that, you know, he's really a third baseman. He'll play some short. In fact, his first games with the Dodgers, his first couple were at third base because
okay,
Justin
wait a
Turner
time
was
out. Time out. I got to ask. Give me the difference then. Let's do a little baseball 101. What's the difference in the skill sets from shortstop to third base?
Well, third base is a reactionary position. You know, it's a fast position. If you're playing halfway in the bag at third base and a guy hits a rocket to your left or to your right, it's reaction. You've got to take a step and a dive to make a play.
It's reflexes.
It's reflexes. You know, that's why it was called historically the hot corner, because it's coming down there hot usually if it's hit hard. At shortstop, you've got time to read the ball. You know, if it's hit to your right, you can decide, do I get around this ball? Do I have time to do that based on who the runner is, based on how hard the ball was hit? Or do I have to backhand this and just, you know, go off my back leg and get rid of this because this guy is so fast that I know I can't do that?
Is it fair to say third base is reaction and shortstop is – well, I'm sorry. Third base is reflex, shortstop is reaction.
No, I say third base is a reactionary position. I've always said that. Shortstop is a reading the play.
Okay, reading the play. That's what I was trying to get to.
Reading the play, reading the bat, off the ball off the bat, knowing the runner, obviously, the batter runner, but reading the ball off the bat and knowing, you know, where the rest of your defense is and knowing what you can get to And with his arm, he has such a good arm that he can throw most guys out. Some guys would put a ball in their back pocket if they're hitting the hole, like with Machado. But when Machado's out there at shortstop, he can make the play and he can make the throw, and he knows that. So there's not a play he can't make out there defensively. I saw him throw guys out that have good speed from short left field that I thought there was no way, because his arm is that strong. He's got a Yasiel Puig type arm at shortstop. That's how good his arm is. I mean, it's a rocket, and he gets rid of it quickly. He knows how to get rid of it. And then going to his left, he's got great range also going left and right. So to me, he can play shortstop. I don't know why the rap on him was that he couldn't play short. He's a third baseman, because he can do either one, obviously.
Obviously, he got $300 million.
But I mean, a lot of people were saying before the trade that really he's a third baseman, that he's going to struggle at short. He didn't struggle at all at short.
Paralysis of analysis, if you ask me.
Right.
Now, Kevin, let's talk about what this means in the big picture. So we want to bring in all the baseball fans around the country. For the labor peace or labor strife that we know is coming in Major League Baseball, Gary Sheffield, outspoken, has said that there's collusion right now amongst the owners.
Right.
You're starting to hear whispers of that. I don't really believe that's true. I think that the market has reset itself, and the 10-year Albert Pujols money is going to be few and far between. I think Manny Machado is the exception. But what does this do for the labor peace in baseball that it took so long to sign Manny, which means there's a lot of other players that are still waiting to see what the market has set? It's now set where Manny Machado is. But in the end, Machado got his money and he got his years. So it's a win for both and a loss for both in a way.
Well, you know, Scott Boras has always said, every time I've talked to Scott, either, you know, personally or been on the air with him, he'll always say it only takes one team to step up and get it done. And that's what San Diego had to do to get Manny Machado. Other teams didn't want to go 10 years. I mean, they wanted to go 7 years at, you know, $28 million or $25 million, but they didn't want to go the 10 years. And I understand that. I said this morning, I wouldn't give a guy 10 years. I wouldn't want to do that. The only advantage that Manny Machado and Bryce Harper have in this market is that they're both young guys. They're at 26 years old.
No 30-year-old is going to get a 10-year contract.
No way. No way. And Albert Pujols, when he got his 10 years with the Angels, and Artie Moreno, the owner, signed off on that, Albert was already in his 30s, and he was already having problems with his feet and with his legs and with the, you know, a lot of issues with running and, you know, sprains things like that. So
I don't think I told you this. I remember Jerry DePoto in ESPN the magazine said, well, by the time at the last year of his contract, everything else will have fallen off, meaning that, you know what, it's okay if we have some dead money. And I think you saw teams attempting to try that where they had dead money, where they had money, top money paid for players past their prime. And I think we saw how that choked some of the players. The Angels, we saw with Alex Rodriguez and the Yankees. And I don't think teams are willing to have dead money paying top dollars to guys that aren't performing at the top level.
No, I agree. And I think for the reasons we've already said, Manny Machado's young. He's played every day. He hasn't been hurt. And his numbers speak for themselves. And so those are a few of the reasons why you'd go the extra couple of maybe 3 years extra more than you wanted to. As far as your question on the market and collusion, I don't necessarily believe it's collusion. I believe it's the way the game is being played today, dictated by the front office and dictated by sabermetric people. I think first what's going on today with these new general managers and these new executives and CEOs and of the baseball departments is that they're checking in with all of their sabermetric people. I mean, some of these organizations have as many as 30 analysts in there for sure.
I'm not laughing. I agree with you.
And 30.
It's almost as if the analytics have completely overtaken the eye test.
Absolutely, they have. And people will say, well, we believe in both. Well, that might be fine and true, but I know even with the San Francisco Giants, when they went to the winter meetings, some of the scouts that usually go to the winter meetings weren't even invited. They took their sabermetric people because they were making decisions based on numbers, not based on what scout says across the room and on the eye test that he saw back in September about a guy or during the season about a guy. And that's a shame, you know, but that's the way the game is. So I think the holdup is also that's part of it. And number two, we're starting to see the openers of pitchers. We're starting to see more.
The dumbest thing of the whole world.
Oh, I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I agree.
You know what happens if you have an opener? That means you don't have five starters.
That's
right. Give me this. I've decided to go with an opener. No, that means you don't have enough pitching depth to give me a five-man rotation, and you're trying to spin it. I'm going to give you some kind of BS to give you an opener.
And here's the other thing is what happens is we're copycats in baseball. So if one team does it, now all of a sudden, well, let's try that. We'll do that with a guy or two with the back end of our rotation because they're not that good, you know. And this particular club has three right-handed hitters, so we'll bring our slider guy in to pitch the first inning. That might be Sergio Romo in the case last year with Tampa Bay, and he gets through the first inning, and now we'll bring our starter in. But what people don't understand, that some people that are making those types of decisions, is that starters are very routine-oriented. Players are routine-oriented, period. And a guy like Madison Bumgarner, for example, when I saw that he said he would walk out if somebody tried to do that when he was pitching, he wouldn't do it. And I understand where he's coming from because the preparation to build up to that fifth day is everything. And you would prepare a little bit differently mentally. That would take the edge off just a little bit. And it's almost like saying, well, you can't get those first three guys out. We don't want to be down in the first inning, so we're going to bring somebody in to open it that we believe can get him out because the stats say so. And then you can pitch the second through the seventh inning or the second through the sixth inning. And then we're going to bring in somebody else because three times around the lineup the last couple of years, Madison, you haven't been as good as you were in the World Series years. And those are the types of things that's how some of the analytic people will answer it, Rich.
Well, if you can't do that, you don't belong in the starting rotation.
Well, and here's what's happening as well. We're copycats in baseball, so one team starts becoming a platoon team like the Dodgers, and all of a sudden other teams go, look what the Dodgers did. I mean, they get David Freese to hit left-handed pitching, right? So a left-handed pitcher starts late in the season or even in the playoffs. He gets a big base hit in the first inning or even hits a home run in the first inning, and now that's left. Left-handed starter is knocked out of the game, and now the righty comes in, and all of a sudden, David Freese doesn't get a second at bat in that game, and you've already started to unload your bench.
Right, and you're going to come up short at the end.
Well, absolutely, and not every team can do that. The Dodgers were fortunate enough to do that. They had Max Muncy hitting 35 home runs last year.
The Dodgers were about as deep as you can go with guys.
But here's the point on that. This is why this offseason is going the way it's going. I think it's part of the reason why you're seeing these guys are not getting the money they are. A lot of teams now say, well, we want to do what the Dodgers are doing. We want to have five or six guys that can play multiple positions. Well, you might be able to play four or five positions, but let me tell you, you don't play four or five positions well at every one of them. And you start making mistakes. And that's, you know, take Kiki Hernandez. He's great at a lot of positions. There's no doubt about it. But he's not a center fielder. And so what did the Dodgers do? They went out and got a true center fielder in A.J. Pollock. I think that speaks for itself. So you can't just say, well, a guy plays a lot of positions. Four or five guys can do that. It's not that easy to do that because you got to work at that position a lot, whether you're playing shortstop, left field, right field. Yeah.
Right. That's why Ben Zobrist brought different gloves because he was forced to do that because he didn't have a natural position that he was a steady Eddie everyday player at.
Exactly.
A couple of things I want to talk about before we get out of here, Skip. Bruce Bochy has announced that this is it. Last year, last go-around, if you will, is the skipper of the San Francisco Giants. I've said this for years. I've said this on satellite radio with you. I've said this on regular radio with you. He needs to, and I hope everybody does this season because it's his final hurrah, they need to start talking about him the way they talk about Joe Torre. When you talk about Bruce Bochy, you need to say future Hall of Fame manager Bruce Bochy the same way we did it for Joe Torre.
Well, I think, you know, the articles I read today, they were saying that, and they should be saying that, at least the ones I saw on Twitter and the ones that I saw online, and glad they are saying that. Bruce told me 2 years ago, I always go down and see Bruce whenever the Giants come into town because I've known him forever. And even when he's gone into the hospital with AFib the last few years, I remember I text him and I always check in on him, see how he's doing. And it's always, I'm doing okay, Kevin. Thanks for checking in. He always has a really positive attitude about it. But
one of the best guys. Best guys.
But he really is. He's never changed. You know, I go back to 1995, and I remember Bruce when he first got the job. I had already managed a couple of years in the big leagues, and the winter meetings were in Arizona and Phoenix, Scottsdale area that year. And I ran into Bruce, and he said, hey, Kevin, do you have any advice? And I said, I said, Bruce, you'll be fine. You were a catcher. You've been there. You'll be absolutely fine. Just be yourself. Be true to yourself. If you believe it, say it. Don't be somebody you're not. That's the only thing I could tell you. And he hasn't. He's never changed. You know, that's the one thing about Bruce. But I knew 2 years ago when I saw him, he goes, Kevin, I'm getting to the point. I want to do what Felipe Alou is doing. I said, what's Felipe doing? He said he's an assistant in the Giants organization to the front office, and he's just got his own schedule. And he says, really, I'm about ready to do that. So when I heard that he was not going to manage anymore after this year, number one, his contract is up. Number two, they're going a new direction in San Francisco, and he knows that with Farhan Zaidi running it now.
Right.
And so it makes the timing of it works out really well for Bruce. And I hope I know the Giants and Larry Bear are going to do a lot of good things, you know, for him and honor him this year. But I hope they give him a pretty good job in the organization, doing pretty much what he wants to do to help the organization evaluate players.
Think about the brain trust that they're going to have for the next skipper. If you ever want some advice, you got Felipe Alou. You've got Dusty Baker, and now you got Bruce Bochy all right there as special assistants. That's pretty impressive. I want to end the podcast, but it's going to be on a sad note, Skip. I've lost. I was telling my wife this weekend that I've lost three great baseball friends this offseason. We're going to talk about one that you lost. And Don Newcomb, who passes away, Dodger legend. We talked about Ken Revisa last year on the podcast. My very dear friend and someone you know very well, Jim McKeon, Major League Baseball umpire, passed away.
Yep.
And then T-Bone, Tommy Giordano, just passed away a week ago. And I wanted to mention all three of those, but I wanted to ask you to speak to a little bit of Don Newcomb and who he was and the man he was.
Well, the best interview I've ever been involved in was the very first year of when it was called XM at the time in 2005. The first couple of days, Rob Bibble and I worked together when we were doing that show for 3 hours every day for the first 4 or 5 years of the channel. We had Pete Rose on and Jose Canseco on day one. For obvious reasons, Jose's book came out the day we opened up the show. The day XM started was Valentine's Day of 2005. But the next day shortly thereafter, I said to Rob and I said to our producer, Chris Eno, I said, we've got to get Don Newcomb on. And he'll talk about Jackie Robinson and Roy Campanella. And I want the fans to hear some of the greatest insight into what really went on, not just as a baseball team, but socially throughout society and really what he meant throughout the world. I mean, he knew Martin Luther King well. A month before Martin Luther King was assassinated, Don Newcomb was having dinner with him at his house, at Martin Luther King's house. And Martin Luther King said how much that Jackie Robinson and Roy Campanella and Don Newcomb meant to the civil rights movement, period. And so this interview that we did, and I hope, you know, SiriusXM plays it a little bit or gets clips of it, because that doesn't matter that it was that many years ago. It's the Don Newcomb that I know, and I want people to hear that. But I'll share a little bit of what he was about. He was about class. He was about treating people the right way. He was the best-dressed man at the ballpark every single day. And I asked him one day, I said, Don, you still wear a suit, a tie? The best set of threads I've ever seen on you every single day, a hat. I mean, you're impeccably dressed. And he said, I learned that from Jackie Robinson. And he said, and Jackie told us, he said, we got to look the part and be the part. And that's got to be part of our life. And we got to dress the part and have class and show people what we're about. And he said, I never forgot that. That was one thing. And so to this day, up until the day he passed away this morning, he wasn't doing that great last couple of years. We know that he apparently had a little bit of beginning of Alzheimer's going on. That's what I understand. And, you know, he wasn't recognizing some people, but he'd still go out to the ballpark and he could still talk about the old days impeccably. You know, that's what happens with that situation. But, he had a fall. I found out he had a fall in January that affected him a little bit. And did hit his head, and that slowed him down. And then there'd been a couple of different falls going on. I won't get into too much detail about what actually happened, but it all affected him to why he ended up passing away today. And It's a sad day for everybody because this man, I was fortunate enough to be a Dodger in the 80s as a young instructor. And there in camp was Roy Campanella working with the catchers in his wheelchair. And I was a catching instructor, so I would help him physically. And then there was Don Newcomb helping with the pitchers. And both of them in the meetings at night.
Wow.
We would just all shut up and listen to stories about their days with Jackie Robinson and growing up in Brooklyn and what went on. So we got a real history of civil rights movement, what it was really like for those players in those days, and what Jackie Robinson really meant and how he led the way. And that, so Don Newcomb felt that he had to keep the torch, so to speak, because the torch was passed on to him and Roy Campanella. And then when we lost Roy Campanella years ago, Don Newcomb was like the last one left from right. really that era and that movement. And that's why he meant so much to everybody in L.A. for sure. But really throughout the country, and I think all of baseball. So to lose Don, because up until a couple of years ago, Rich, I mean, even into his 90s, early 90s, he was as sharp as a tack.
I'd see him at Dodger Stadium. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
My friend, Tommy.
One more word I want to say. He said there was one word Jackie taught him. And he said, we want to change that word bitter, because a lot of guys are bitter. This is going back to the 40s and 50s now. And before the actual, you know, civil rights movement with Martin Luther King in the 60s. And he said, Jackie wanted to change that word. Don't be bitter about what's going on. Let's change that I to a E and make things better.
I never heard that story.
That's Don Newcomb would tell us that often about Jackie, would tell those guys that.
Well, you know, Mitch Lukovic always taught me, and it's a mantra that I give and I pass on to my son, is you have a choice. You can either get bitter or you can get better. The choice is yours.
Well, that's what Jackie was saying. You know, don't be bitter, guys, about, you know, where we're at right now in Major League Baseball. You know, let's make things better. I have my chance, and now you guys are up here, and we're going to make things better. And that's why he wanted to do everything the right way. And he taught Roy and Don Newcomb how to dress, how to act, how to be first class, and to his dying day. We're talking about a first-class gentleman all the way, Dan Don Newcomb.
I want to mention my friend Tommy Giordano, T-Bone.
Mm-hmm.
No, throughout baseballs, right, Skip?
Well, Tommy was I'll just say one word, and I want you to finish it, because you know him well. He was a scout at the end, and you saw him a lot in Tampa there. But Tommy was in Baltimore when I was there. He was a scouting director, and then later, after Clyde Clutch died, a year after he drafted me, as a farm director, Tommy took over both jobs for several years for the Baltimore Orioles, and he followed Hank Peters wherever he went. So I know Tommy from my first 6-7 years in pro baseball. So sorry to hear. I heard that last week that he passed away as well. And he was still working, by the way, too.
But 90, go ahead. 94 years old.
He got a 3-year contract, I heard.
Extension. 3-year contract at 94. Please, dear God, let me have that. Loved to be at the ballpark every day.
Yeah.
Had time for everybody, whether you were a snot-nosed rookie Cub reporter or a Hall of Famer. Everybody wanted to spend time with T-Bone. He wanted to talk to you. He cared about you. He knew the names of your family, your kids, your wife. He knew what was going on in your life. He was such a gentleman. And I'll tell you that the funny part is two things, Skip, two things. And this tells you kind of the person that he was. Because he took me under his wing, and he and I and Joe Castiglione would go to for the Red Sox would go to dinner in Fort Myers, and I'd actually make excuses to go down to Fort Myers to see Joe and T-Bone and have dinner with them. Even if I didn't have to be down there, I just make the trip anyway because I wanted to spend time with them. But I walked around for years asking everybody, why doesn't Dustin Pedroia get beat on fastballs inside? Because you look at him and it's such a little guy, but he's got that big swing, right?
Mm-hmm.
T-Bone, I asked everybody and their brother. I asked everybody what was going on. Nobody could explain it to me. T-Bone goes, well, I don't know. Come here. Let's watch it, kid. And he explained to me, it's not that the swing is long. To the ball, he's short. He's compact. There's not a lot of wasted movement. He just has a big backswing and follow through and
finish.
That makes it look like it's a big, long, looping swing. That's why I'm like, I've asked people for years. You're the first person to ever figure it out. He's also the one that pulled my son aside when he was 7-8 years old and said, here's the key to hitting. For every inch the ball comes towards you, your nose has to meet it. And if your nose meets the ball right in front of you, then you're going to make contact. Little things like that made it so simple, this complicated game, and I'm grateful that I got a chance to be his friend.
Well, I am too, and that's why guys like Tom Giordano and the guys with the eye test, that's why they a lot of people believed in them and kept hiring them, and that's why he kept working so long and got a 3-year extension not too long ago, as a matter of fact. So that tells you a lot. Jack McKeon, who did not pass away, 88 years of age, had worked a show a couple Saturdays ago, and we had him on, and he said he's still waiting to hear from Derek Jeter because
hey, Jeter needs all the help he can get right now down there.
We asked what happened. Well, you know, he signed with Washington just a few weeks ago, and he's working at 88 years of age with the Nationals. His son is, I think, the farm director or a big assistant there at least. And he said, well, Derek Jeter said, you're going to be okay here. We'll work something out. He goes, I'll get to you in a couple of weeks. And then, of course, in typical Jack McKeon fashion, you know, the punchline was, I said, well, what happened? He goes, well, I'm still waiting for that phone call. It's been a couple of weeks turned into 2 years.
Oh, that is awesome.
But it just tells you guys like that, you know, 88, 92, John Newcomb still had a lot of value. I mean, you ask Kenley Jansen about what Don Newcomb meant to him, and he'll break down crying, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don helped him a lot just mentally on how to get people out, not maybe so much physically, but mentally. So those guys are still very important, and not in just the game, but in life, obviously, that they can help and teach.
Absolutely. All right, that's going to do it for our podcast. We will be back with you again next week. Don't forget, if you want to find Kevin Kennedy, Kevin Kennedy MLB on Twitter. I am RBI Rich. Thanks for joining us, everybody, on America's Best Baseball Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.